Hi, I'm Dr. Wambui, and welcome to the Drug Chat. I think that the human body is intricately created, making us one of the most amazing living things on earth. In this podcast, we explore how the body works and then apply the drugs. My hope is that with this knowledge, we become better healthcare providers, whatever field of medicine you may be in, better caregivers to our patients or to ourselves. We do take medicines from time to time, don't we? All right, let's break it down. Hello, my fellow or dear podcast listeners. Welcome back. We're still talking about strokes. And before we tackle the next set of drug therapy class, let's recap what in the world is a stroke anyway. So, on a normal working day in your brain, it needs oxygen and nutrients to be able to function. Your whole body, no matter what, is dependent on the brain functioning well. If the brain doesn't function, then that means that your body is not going to function well. So for this oxygen and nutrients to reach your brain, the delivery mode is the blood, okay? So in a stroke, there's a blockage of how of your brain cells receiving this oxygen and nutrients. There are two types of strokes. There's ischemic and hemorrhagic. Ischemic stroke is where there's a restriction or reduction of blood flow to your brain. Something is blocking the road and that blood is not being able to get to your brain. The second type of is called the hemorrhagic stroke. And this occurs because the delivery, you know, that the artery that's carrying that blood has ruptured or burst. Okay. Oh, and then, of course, the blood goes everywhere. Or the leakage has occurred because of an aneurysm, which is a fancy way of saying that there is a bulge in the part of your vessel. It has ballooned out, like a little balloon has formed. And as this gets weak, and then the blood starts leaking and goes everywhere. This leaked blood puts lots of pressure on the brain cells, damaging them, all right? So those are the two types of stroke. Back to anticoagulants, which is the class that we're going to be looking at today. So as the name says, anti means against. We don't like it. Coagulant is the word coagulate means a change to solid or semi-solid. So in terms of the blood that we are talking about today, these drugs are against the blood changing from liquid to solid or semi-solid, all right? We don't want the clots, all right? So you'll see them referred to as blood thinners. So they interrupt, the anticoagulants interrupt the process involved in the formation of this blood clot. They are used in the management and prevention of strokes, which is important. So it's not just for managing, it's not just for preventing a stroke from happening, but it's also used in the management of the stroke, okay? But keep in mind, obviously, that if we're talking about formation of blood clots, that means that you can see these anticoagulants used in other disease states that are wanting the prevention or the formation of clots. May it be a deep vein thrombosis, we don't want a clot in the legs area, or we are talking about heart attacks, okay? Just keep that in mind. As much as we're talking about them in the stroke situation, you will see them used in other disease states. Interestingly, studies have shown that the use of anticoagulation decreases the risk of an ischemic stroke by over 2/3. That is so significant. Out of three people, the two that are using anticoagulants, you know, the risk is decreased, right? So these are obviously very important things. All right. So I'm going to give you an example that you can feel free when educating patients, because remember, when you empower the patient as to why they should be using these drugs, then adherence is going to go up and you're not going to have issues with, I didn't think it was that important, right? So this is what I use to educate the patients. So depending on what part of the world they're from, just tell them, when you're making porridge, or you have a recipe to make a roux, right? And a roux is what we are using to make the a stew thick, correct? You need to keep stirring it, let me go with the porridge. You need to keep stirring it Otherwise, it's going to clamp. And who wants to take porridge that has clamps? Yeah, that will make me throw up. Or who you wants to use a roux to make a stew that is clumpy? Nobody. So that's the same thing with anticoagulants. What they're doing in your body, they're stirring up your blood. It's making sure that no clumps occur. All right. So feel free to use it. So the classes of anticoagulants are direct thrombin inhibitors, coumarins, factor 10A inhibitors, and heparins. And we'll be starting with the coumarin. In this case, we'll begin with warfarin, which is the most commonly prescribed oral anticoagulant in the world. Okay. And the way it works by inhibiting vitamin K epoxide reductase. For short, we call it VKOR. What is it? It's an enzyme, the ACE part. Reductase should have given you that clue. And remember what an enzyme is? An enzyme is a catalyst. It's something that makes things go faster, all right? So again, let's go back to our bodies. On a normal working day in your body, you have this thing called clotting factors. Basically, their work is that once the clotting process begins, they are the guys that come out to make sure that this clotting happens as it's supposed to. So for example, if you start bleeding, this beautiful machine called our body figures out, hey, we're losing blood and this is not good. And so the clotting factors are woken up and told, dude, we have work to do. So they get turned on for clotting to occur and voila, bleeding stops. Amazing, right? So of course, this beautiful scientist figured out, wait a minute, these clotting factors, especially number 2, number 7, number 9, number 10, and some other two called protein C and S, guess what they need so that they can go on? Vitamin K. So they thought to themselves, well, if we could get rid of vitamin K, then these clotting factors will not go on. If these clotting factors do not go on, then clotting will not occur and you're anticoagulated. All right. So that's how warfarin works, right? Interestingly, warfarin, actually, the genesis of it is from plants. When it first came on the scene, it was used as a rat killer. So it just, when the rat ate it, it just bled out, right? But it was approved for human use in the 1950s. So this warfarin is over 60 years old, yet it is the most prescribed oral anticoagulant. Take home message, respect your elders. Right? We still work. All right. So back to warfarin. So warfarin is basically a disruptor. It figures out that if it can block this enzyme called VKOR, then the pathway of turning on the clotting factors that need vitamin K will not go on and clots will not be formed. And that's exactly how it works, just for repeating purposes. All right. So of course, this drug has side effects, and if its work is to make sure that you don't clot, then what's the bigger side effect of warfarin? Bleeding. So again, in educating your patients, just like you told them that the reason why they're taking it is that clumps are not formed, you also need to power them with what to monitor for with this drug. So they need to monitor for signs that will indicate that, wait a minute, I think this blood is too thin. How? Like bleeding gums when they brush their teeth. It's not normal for you to brush your teeth and you bleed, correct? Or they notice that their urine is red or brown. Or when they cough, just a regular cough, and there's nothing else going on with them, they cough up blood. So basically where there's blood that shouldn't be, they need to come right back to you and tell you, something is not right. However, there are also other side effects or complications that can also be a sign of it, and it's not necessarily bleeding, like dizziness, shortness of breath, unexplained swelling, joints or your joint aches, headaches, chest, abdomen paining. So if your patient presents with this, make sure that you check. that it isn't some other it's not some overcoagulation going on. So this is what you arm the patient with, that what they need to come and tell you, what they need to be looking out for. However, even as the patient is doing their due diligence, there is monitoring that is required of you too. So let me explain this by starting with a big word. So narrow therapeutic index, which means any small change in a dose of the drug or blood concentration of a drug may lead to therapeutic failures and or adverse events that can be life-changing. So meaning, if I have been taking 1 milligram of warfarin, a little change to like 1.1, it's a 0.1 change, and it's capable of totally throwing me off and could even be life-threatening or a failure. It's not working, right? And that's why they're called narrow therapeutic index drugs. And warfarin, of course, is on that list. And that's where your work of monitoring comes in. Warfarin is monitored by checking a parameter called INR. And depending on why your patient is on the warfarin, are they on it because they had a DVT, or are they on it because they had a stroke, or are they on it because they had a TAG? There is a target range, okay? So before I even get to target range, what is INR? INR stands for International Normalized Ratio. And basically what that number tells us is how long is it taking for your blood to clot? So for example, let's say the goal for strokes, or the reason how I want the amount of coagulation I want, or non-coagulation I want in your blood, is like 2 to 3. So when you do the test and the answer comes back that your INR is 4 and my goal is 2 to 3. What does that tell me? It tells me that you're at risk of bleeding out. I have too much coagulation that is going on. I need to pull back on that warfarin dose. But if it comes back as 1 and my goal is 2 to 3, oh, and I said, we have a problem. Clots could form very easily on this patient, so I need to increase the dose of warfarin. So you'll see clinicians, especially at the beginning of when the patient has started out on the warfarin, they have this INR blood test done severally so that we can figure out the patient's sweet spot. How much warfarin should we put you on to give you in the correct range of INR, all right? So as I said, it's a narrow therapeutic index drug, right? Every little change can make a big difference. So you also have to look at interactions. So remember, vitamin K is a big player in this. So guess what? You need to be cognizant of how much vitamin K am I taking from my food. For example, I love green leafy vegetables. You know, they call it greens, the broccoli, the spinach, the cabbage. Guess what they're high in? Vitamin K. So what do you think will happen when this week I had cabbage and leafy and collard greens every single day of the week, and then next week I have 0, right? So I'm not telling you to tell your patient that they shouldn't take them. I'm just saying, can we just be consistent in how much we eat this? If you eat it 3 times a week, just let it be 3 times a week, because it may not be big maybe, but then remember, human bodies are different. So it's possible that 1 cup of cabbage for me is going to make a big difference compared to you. But it's just a conversation to have with the patient. Now, when it comes to drug-drug interaction, because remember, narrow therapeutic index, everything and anything can make a difference, right? For me, when I see a patient on warfarin, my brain goes ding, 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 ding. Just double check everything. Because if there's one drug that I feel interacts with everybody, I think it's a very friendly drug, it's warfarin. And some drugs can increase the effectiveness and other drugs can decrease its effectiveness. So I don't care how much you know, just double check, because warfarin tends to be very friendly with other people. Just make sure that warfarin is not trying to in their interactions with other drugs, with foods, with supplements, you know, like St. John Wort, all those things, just double check. Your brain needs to go on fire when you see a patient that's on warfarin, because I can guarantee you, warfarin is going to try and go and make friends, all right? All right, so that's the first group of anticoagulants, the coumarin, specifically warfarin. It's good to start with the oldies because they are the goodies. And then as we move on, we can see how have we tried to improve on this warfarin. All right, till next time, have a good one. Happy listening. I am Dr. Wamboi, and thanks for listening to this episode of The Drug Chat. If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and remember to share with your friends. Until next time, stay inquisitive. Bye.